Monday! Open wide dev fans! Get ready to stuff your face with JavaScript, CSS, Node Modules, barbecue tips, Git workflows, breakdancing, soft skills, web development, the hastiest, the craziest, the tastiest web development treats. Coming in hot, here is Wes, Barracuda, Boss, and Scott, El Toro Loco, Tolinsky.
Welcome to Syntax. In this Monday hasty treat, we're going to be talking about Axios and why people still use Axios over Fetch, instead of Fetch, I should say. So my name is Scott Tolinsky. I'm a developer from Denver, Colorado. And with me, as always, is the Axios user of the two of us, Wes, Boss.
Hey, excited to talk about this.
I'm of the specific mind of the type of person who is looking at this episode and being like, yeah, why? Why do people use Axios over Fetch? Because we've only ever used Fetch. I'm very used to Fetch, and I don't do a ton of complex stuff with it, but at the same time, I don't necessarily have any problems. So I'm interested in hearing what exactly the use case is here, why it's better, all of those lovely things. But before we get into that, let's talk about two of our amazing sponsors, two companies that have been sponsoring us for a long time now, and some of our favorite services out there. We have Linode and Sentry. Wes, do you want to talk about Linode?
Linode is cloud computing that developers trust. It's awesome. If you have your JavaScript developer listening to this episode, you want to host that app that you just built somewhere. Well, Linode offers VPS, virtual private servers. You can spin up a Linux server. You can use some of their pre-made Node versions, or you can just spin it up and you have Node installed for you. And you can host your website right on Linode. They offer all kinds of other stuff as well. Check it out at Linode, linode.com/syntax. That will get you $100 in free credit, which is pretty sweet. Thank you, Linode, for sponsoring.
This episode is also sponsored by Sentry at sentry.io. Sentry is one of those tools that you just got to have. It's a perfect place to capture, log all of your errors and exceptions. But more than just that, it helps you understand how your website is functioning at any given point in time, which release has made it more buggy, less buggy. If you have regressions, things that you've already fixed that have made their way back, or perhaps things that you thought you fixed and you didn't actually fix them, Sentry's going to let you know, and it'll even send you a notification or an email saying, hey, there's been a regression here. You said this thing was fixed and it wasn't. Sentry also is also always changing with either custom dashboards being added or performance metric tracking tools. It's one of those tools that's been evolving for a long time, and you gotta love that. So check it out at sentry.io. Use the coupon code TASTYTREAT, all lowercase, all one word, and you will get 2 months for free. Thank you so much for Sentry for sponsoring. Okay, so Axios, Wes. Axios, spelled A-X-I-O-S, is a library that people use instead of the Fetch API to do network requests, correct?
Exactly. And I thought we would have a little episode on, like, why do people still use it? And, like, what features are there that you are not sure of? Because Axios was around long before Fetch was, and it is like the best like ergonomic library for actually firing off, I'm going to call it AJAX requests to fetch data or images or literally anything. You upload something to the server. It's great for that. And often you see like why people are just like, why would you ever use Axios? Now we have Fetch. Fetch is in now it's in Node. Fetch is in all the browsers. I don't see why you would ever want to do that. So let's just dive into some of the features that they have. And I've got just a bunch of different bullet points here. And the sort of, I think the probably the biggest one why someone wouldn't use Fetch is either, sorry, not Fetch, Axios, is either you're perfectly fine with Fetch. It does absolutely everything you want. And I think for a lot of people that's true. For me, I would say in 90% of the use cases, Fetch does everything that I possibly want. And if there's something like, I don't necessarily like the double promise, you just make a little, function and tuck that away inside of a function, right?
Yeah, totally.
And then you're like, you could just make a fetch JSON function and call it a day. So either people are fine with that or, and I suspect this is true with you, for your more complex stuff, you're not using Fetch. You're using like a library that integrates with React or Svelte or GraphQL, or it's being generated for you automatically in a, is that true with you?
It's sort of true. It's true in the fact that I am using a library to do that. But what's not true is that, or I guess a caveat here is I wrote the library. So the library is just using Fetch and I wrote that. And it is being generated, but it's calling it what's in my library. It's called GFetch or GQuery.
Yeah.
So it's running a GFetch, which is really all it's doing is taking a GraphQL query, turning it into the appropriate type of string in the body, and then calling Fetch directly. So even that is just using Fetch as is. It's not using anything else. But I mean, exactly. I wrote it, so yeah.
Yeah, it is a lot. I think that's another thing is that with Fetch can do anything you want. And before you know it, you say, oops, I wrote a library, right? And that's good in most cases. So let's go through it. So I think the number one reason why people are still using Axios over Fetch is because they started before Fetch was the thing. And there is no benefit to switching over. The benefit, I think, would be is that you don't have the dependency of Axios in any of your code, which is very valid when you're doing client-side code because you don't have to download that entire library. On the server side, it's not so much, right?
Yeah, totally.
Next one is no need to tack on a double JSON promise. That's a pretty minor one.
Yeah.
Having to, so in Fetch, you have to await the response, and then you have to await the response that's turned into
JSON
or yeah. text or image or whatever. Most likely it's JSON, right?
What's funny is for me, like that one doesn't necessarily hit me that hard, but that is the exact type of thing where I would use. Like there's so many use cases where I would pick a library over another one because it doesn't make me do a double thing. I'm like, oh, it's one less line of code. That's cool with me. But yeah. In this particular case, for some reason, it just doesn't bother me. I don't know why.
That's good. Next is, so Axios has a huge feature called interceptors. And an interceptor is kind of like middleware on the server side mm-hmm. where you intercept a request. And on that request, you can do things like add API keys. You can add specific headers that need to be added. You can reject the request if the data being sent is not valid. You can massage the data. So maybe you're in a migration and you used to send an object that was straight data. And now you need to send an object that has a data property inside of it. Like that's a big one. You're like, okay, we're making a full API version change here. And in order to support some of the feature stuff that we are doing, now we have to change how the data is being submitted to our backend. And okay, we have 100 Axios requests in our library, in our thing. You could just write one interceptor and say, if there is no data property, then create a new object, stick all the data in a data property, and then keep going along. That'd be really handy in a migration without having to do it all at once, because you can't possibly do that all in one go, right?
Yeah, it's fun. Would you consider that middleware in quotes here?
I think so. Yeah, they call it an interceptor, but I like the idea of calling that a middleware.
Yeah, because as you were explaining that, I was like, that kind of feels like middleware, but I'm not quite sure if that doesn't fit the definition for some reason. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We had a couple people on Twitter say that they use it. They use interceptors to cache third-party data. Hmm. So again, like we talked about this in the episode about Cloud Functions. If you are hitting a third-party API, for example, the weather API, and the weather API only gives you 100 requests an hour or 1,000 requests a day, what you can do is you can intercept those requests and say, okay, given the query that you have provided, have we already done that request in the last hour? If so, then just serve that up from cache. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people said, we just stick our API data in Redis and have a nice quick little cache to serve up from there. Pretty easy. We had somebody on Twitter said, interceptor catching an expired JWT and renewing it on the fly and replaying the initial request with the new token is a huge deal breaker. Can I do that with plain fetch? So that's kind of an interesting one. If you got an app sitting around for 12 hours, maybe it's a desktop app. Somebody makes a new request. They hit the refresh button. you can renew your JSON web token on the fly and replay it. And he said, can I do that with plain fetch? And the answer to that is, yeah, you can do anything with plain fetch.
Yeah, you,
you
can
just
do
have to actually write the code to actually do that, right? Like, fetch is kind of interesting because it is like a, it's a fundamental, but it also just works in most of the use cases as well. You don't necessarily need to build on top of it, but if you want to, you, you totally can.
Interesting.
Progress, upload, download progress. If you want to be able to share with your user, let's say they're uploading a 20 megs of images, you want to be able to handle progress events that are being sent back from the server and display that. Apparently, Axios does a really good job at handling multi-part uploads like that.
Hmm. Yeah. How accurate is those types of progress things? I always wonder about that. So it's basically calculating, yeah, I guess just the total data sent versus the total data is there. But is it
on the client, you can tell how big images are. And on the server, it will tell you how much progress it is. It also, it should know how large the image is that is being sent to it.
Yeah.
So it should be able to provide you with both of those. I've actually never had to write a progress upload.
I haven't either. In my brain, I just think about like the Windows 95 progress ones where it'd be like, you know, it's like 99% of the way on the progress meter, but it still is going to take like another 4 hours, even though it's just totally inaccurate.
Yeah, I think those are inaccurate because they don't necessarily know, the speed of your network and of the hard disk that it's writing to and how many files there are. And just uploading files, you know what is being requested to be uploaded. And the progress doesn't tell you how much time is left. You could estimate that based on how well it's going, but the progress should just tell you out of 10 megs, this is how many have been uploaded and this is how many files have been uploaded.
Word.
This one is really interesting to me is the validate status API. Have you ever had, this happens in my advanced React course, have you ever had a successfully failed error in GraphQL?
Yeah, that's almost, well, so the whole thing is that GraphQL always returns a 200 no matter what, or at least it should. Like that's the way you're supposed to do requests in GraphQL is to return a 200. And then in the message, the data, you should declare whether or not there's been an error or not, which is honestly one of my least favorite parts of GraphQL. It's like, I just want to, you know, return a correct browser status like, or whatever.
It doesn't throw when it's an error. Right. So you have to check success if it's successfully errored. So in Axios, if for whatever reason the server you're working with is giving you the wrong status code, or you want to check the data and then change the status code based on the data that is returned, you can do that with a validate status. The validate status API is part of Axios. So again, if you've got a particularly tricky API that you're working with, you can write a little bit of normalization in there to make it work how you're expecting, especially if you're working, building an app that interfaces with lots of different APIs out there and all the APIs don't work exactly the same. Like you're making a real estate API and you're trying to talk with Zillow and Realtor, and, you know, and they don't all work exactly the same way. It's really hard to write consistent code when all of them are different. So being able to write, like, again, it's kind of like a middleware is really handy there. Defaults. So if you want to set API keys and default headers on all of your requests, you can set defaults in that. And it will go again. You could also just make a default object and send that along on every single fetch request or put that into a closure with fetch. You could do that easily, but that's something Axios offers. Axios has adapters, which is really handy for testing. If you need to like swap out an API for some fake data, potentially.
Yeah, what does an adapter mean in this context?
Let's pull up the Axios docs, see if they got a good example. So one of these is the Axios mock adapter, where if you are hitting an API, you could write an adapter that, again, it's kind of like a middleware. It steps in, doesn't actually hit the API for that data, but it will step in between and return some fake data. Yeah. An adapter allows custom handling of requests, makes testing easier. That's what they have in there. So again, not something I would probably leave that up to my testing library and to do mocking and spying mm-hmm. on those network requests. That seems something that is better suited to put at a test level. But again, it's in there. I'm sure there are some good use cases for that.
You know what we do? We use MSW mock service workers for mocking for our tests. And that's pretty neat because it steps in the middle as a service worker and will return the data.
That's exactly what service workers are for.
Yeah. The only bummer is that I have to turn off server-side rendering for our E2E tests because then it still wants to return the data from the server if I want mock data.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the only bummer with that approach.
Interesting. That's cool. Custom timeouts. This is a big one. If you want to be able to set a timer, be like, all right, fetch this API, but only try for 10 seconds or 2 seconds. Fetch doesn't have a timeout. You'd have to set up your own timers with Fetch if you wanted to put a custom timeout on something. So again, that's probably not something people are hitting all the time, mm-hmm. right? But if you specifically are working with a server, I think a lot of these are, if you're working with a server that could be tricky, especially if that server is out of your control, then a lot of these use cases come in really, really handy.
Yeah. I didn't know it was so full featured, I guess. It like almost feels like a framework type of deal, like an Express type mm-hmm. of thing where you have all these nice little helpers. I thought it was really just, we'll reduce the double request on Fetch.
Yeah. That's what a lot of people, used it for, but I don't think that is, you shouldn't be using it if that's what all you're using it for.
Well, see, that's exactly why I was of the mind of like, I don't get why Wes likes this thing or uses this thing. So I'm glad that I got to be a little audience proxy for most of this here.
Yeah. I also use it in my own application where we check if you are authenticated and you have the specific permissions on the client side. So when you send off a request, if you're not logged in or if your login has expired, then it will just redirect you to a specific one, which is pretty cool. And then the last one here is, I use it because Postman auto-generates Axios code. Call me lazy, but it's true. It's helped me move fast with quick Node.js scripting efforts many times. So I thought that was funny. I would imagine that these Postman things would also be adapted for Fetch pretty soon as well, because that's kind of cool. But that is why people still use Axios. It's a great little tool. Again, I probably still use Fetch in 80% of my use cases, but for when you want a little bit more control and you feel like I'm kind of rewriting the wheel here. Is that a rewriting? Yeah. Reinventing the wheel here. Then there's probably a use case in Axios for that type of thing if you don't want to have to rewrite your entire function yourself.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah.
It's so funny that you had that moment with reinventing the wheel. Wes, I've been listening to this new podcast where it's just two people reviewing Dateline episodes, and I don't even watch Dateline, Dateline is kind of an outrageous show, and these people have like a whole system about it, and I found it to be super entertaining. But in one of the episodes that I was listening to, there was a guy who kept saying sayings that weren't real things or combining multiple sayings, and I was just thinking about how many times we both do that, because the one on the episode was like, oh yeah, she's off her marbles. It's like, off her marbles, or like lost her marbles, off her rocker, whatever he was trying to say. It's just like mixing several different sayings together. And I was just cracking up every time because the poor guy could not come up with one real saying.
I love mixing up sayings or making your own sayings. This is a great, drives people crazy.
It does. Yes.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will catch you on Wednesday.
Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.